Welcome to the Red Zone.
Showtime, everybody. It is 6 o'clock on Friday, July the 6th. For those listening on the podcast later on, Alex Leopold and Josh Miller inside the CKCU studios. Joshua.
Time to put away your DJ hat and...
That's right. Well, you know, it is a tardy or absent morning this morning at CKCU. As the mix was not in, they will be back in next week. And Susan Johnson won't be in this morning for the Friday Morning Special Blend. Sorry to ruin anybody's morning that didn't want to know that about Susan. Somebody will be coming in to fill in for, I'm sure, and will do a superb to outstanding job. We need not worry.
We would stay had we had...
had we been able to.
Prior notice.
As we are more than willing to fill in for Susan anytime she asks for it.
But a little bit short notice.
And we have got plenty of stuff to talk
Big
about.
Big show. We have, let's run down everything we'll be talking about today.
Well, it's free agent heavy. We will say that much.
And it's a free show.
And at 6:40, we will have our Habs insider and blogger, Louis Moustakas, joining us via the telephone to talk about some of the moves that they've made so far this week. But where we're going to start is an obvious place, and that is given the amount of hype that has been surrounding the Minnesota Wild over the last 2 days. I don't think I've seen any team go from general wilderness and nothingness to the spotlight so quickly.
Because they've never had to, really.
No, they've never had to.
I mean, if you look at their record, they were selling out every game prior to last season.
Prior to about 2 years ago. Because Minnesota is known as the state of hockey, and they do love it up there.
Well, they love high school.
I say up there because they are further north than we are.
High school hockey, college hockey.
In Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan.
I've said it many times. People talk about how Canadians, I think Minnesotans are more crazy about hockey than the average Canadian. That's not going to sit well with a lot of people, but that's my opinion.
Regardless, fanship aside, the Wild have fallen by the wayside in terms of the conscience for the people in St. Paul or Minneapolis, or in the state of Minnesota in general, because they really haven't given anybody a whole lot to cheer about. Since that surprise run to 2003 Western Conference Finals, they really haven't done anything of note.
If you look at the sports landscape in Minnesota right now, this was the best time for them to make a splash because the Vikings are down.
In terms of they need a new stadium and they're going to suck for a while.
Right. The Twins are down. College football in Minnesota, let's not even talk about the Golden Gophers, okay? So.
And the Timberwolves are permanently down.
Yeah.
They have been since Kevin Garnett left.
So, with those acquisitions, they become head over heels, quote unquote, the ticket in Minnesota.
So let me get your initial thoughts on this deal before I go off on a rant of my own. 13 years, $98 million apiece. They signed on the dotted line for the exact same amount of money, which shows solidarity on their part. They only took $98 million.
Only took $98 million. I like how you slid that in there.
But what do you think about this? And does it surprise you that guys that... And Zach Parise is an all-world talent, but he wouldn't be considered amongst the greatest in the league. He's probably in the top 10 conversation. And Ryan Suter's probably in the top... Well, he is in the top 10 conversation as well for defensemen. But these guys are on the cusp of being the fourth and fifth $100 million contracts in NHL history. So what are your thoughts on the deal?
Well, if you look at it from a hockey standpoint, I think it's great. You're getting two great players for this team.
And you gave up nothing for them. That's the biggest thing.
Well, that's the thing about free agency is...
But that's what I'm saying, is that Minnesota already has a good young core of prospects intact, and they didn't have to screw with any of that to get both of these players.
Now, what you said is also a plus and a negative. You talk about the youth of that team. You bring in two guys that are head over heels above everybody else. How does that affect your locker room? How do those youngsters, because Parise and Suter now are thrust with the responsibility of being examples, and lucky for Minnesota and lucky for them that that's not a problem for them, because they both come from situations previously where leadership is expected and demanded of you.
My absolute kudos has to go to both Zach Parise and Ryan Suter in the sense that it has been a very, very, very long time since I can remember any player in any sport of a high caliber going home again. And Ryan Suter is obviously from Wisconsin, but no team there.
Are you saying you wouldn't go home for $98 million?
I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is other people offered more money. They offered more money in certain places to go there. And they decided to take the money to go home. And that is a seldomly seen thing anymore in sports. And that's something that we're going to be talking about throughout the show. It's kind of the theme of today's show. But guys will very, very, very seldomly, Josh, decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to embrace the spotlight. I'm going to go home. And I'm going to play where my friends and family are. Because there is this miscommunication that has seemed to come in sports where people think that they should be able to go to a place, make millions of dollars, and deal with none of the pressure.
Toil in anonymity.
They want their freedom. They want their privacy. They don't want to have snow on the ground 6 months of the year. They don't want to, because I say that because the general population of hockey players come from a place with snow on the ground. They don't want to have their friends and family bugging them for tickets. They don't want to deal with the idea of failure in their own backyard. Pick a player. It doesn't matter who it is.
Well, it's something we could ask Louis about later on when we have him on, because, you know, him covering Montreal, he's got the template for not wanting to go home. Because none of the French players want to go anymore.
No.
And there's a lot of very varying factors to that, but that's the template for the whole thing, is that guys want to have their cake and eat it too. It's easy to do great things when there's no expectation. Great players do things in pressure situations.
So it gives them a little bit of kudos, and that's what I give to both of them, for making this decision, for going as home can be for Suter, and going home for Zach Parise. Because I think everybody knew, including the New Jersey Devils organization, that they weren't going to stay. If the ownership situation was stable in New Jersey, I believe he would have re-signed.
Mm-hmm.
But that is long gone. That is beyond the point now. This is a new team. And an instant, not contender, but suddenly relevant team in a relevant market on the NHL landscape once again. Well, and this was the perfect time to do this. As you say, they were toiling in anonymity for a while there, a couple of years now. But they needed a face of the franchise.
Because other than Marian Gaborik, who they drafted...
And that's what I was going to say. The only thing that they've ever had that's close to that is Marian Gaborik. But please, do you think anybody laments over the fact that they don't have Marian Gaborik there anymore?
Well, the problem with Gaborik was that he wasn't able to stay healthy.
He's not a back checker. He's not a complete player. No.
He wasn't in the right situation in Minnesota, too, with Jacques Lemaire there. And I thought that really hurt him, too. And I
kudos to him for still scoring 40 goals a couple times, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, like, this is the first major splash
the Minnesota Wild franchise has ever made.
And they date back to, what,
99-2000,
so 12, 13 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time to wait if you're a Wild. But as we said, they were selling out every game. Not all that long. So there was no reason to spend the money and make a splash. Toronto fans, are you listening to this? Stay home.
Parise, Backstrom, Suter, Koivu, Heatley, Setoguchi, Charlie Coyle, Granlund. They have a lot all of a sudden.
Has Granlund finally committed to coming?
He hasn't officially come over here yet.
Because from what I hear, he's still going to play another year.
And maybe he might.
Yeah.
Maybe this move affords them the type of seasoning that they can continue to move him along at his own pace as opposed to an accelerated pace. But nonetheless, Mika Koivu, obviously playing on a line last year with Heatley and Setoguchi, he has somebody to pass to. But at the same time, it gives the Minnesota Wild two formidable lines, which is something they've never dealt with ever.
Now, let me...
A long-standing defense-first hockey team suddenly has a bit of an offensive flair to it.
Let me ask you this. So you alluded to it earlier. Does this make them a contender for the Stanley Cup?
I think it's way too early to tell. I think that...
Because you have to see how everybody's going to gel together. And
that takes time. And people are throwing around the idea of the Miami Heat of the NHL. Because Zach Parise,
please,
and because Zach Parise and Ryan Suter kind of, you know, work together in coming there. But you look at those, like I said, you look at those top two lines, and suddenly the team is looking very, very, very balanced at the top six position. Zach Parise, Mika Koivu, Danny Heatley on the first line. That'll score you some goals. That much I think that we can be certain of. Danny Heatley is slowing down. Well, I don't think anybody's going to argue there.
No, but what it does, too, when you have solid top two lines, solid top six, as you said, it makes the third line better automatically. Because you're not getting... You're getting mismatches on your third line.
And then you got Pierre-Marc Bouchard, who never seems to be able to stay healthy either. Matt Cullen, the Minnesota native, and Devin Setoguchi. And then they picked up Zenon Konopka, who people know in this town for both as a 67 and as a Sen. Cal Clutterbuck, who is amongst, in my opinion, the very best pest in the NHL in terms of what he brings. But then they have a very young defense core, too. They've got a young American like Justin Falk. They have Ryan Suter. They have Marco Scandella and Clayton Stoner and Tom Gilbert. Suddenly the team is looking not bad. In terms of being a contender, I don't think that we can say one way or another just yet whether or not they are. But they certainly are, to me, barring any significant injuries or something, they are suddenly a lock for at least a playoff spot.
I think there's no question of that. And as we saw this past season, if you get into the playoffs, anything is possible. LA certainly proved that.
Relevant tweet that I wanted to mention by Down Goes Brown, who anybody in the Twitter sphere that is a hockey fan must know about the man. And he rustled up a chart from 13 years ago amongst 27-year-old players. So this is the life of what is going to be a Ryan Suter and Zach Parise contract. 13 years later, when all these players are 40, the highest scoring 27-year-old in the year 1998. 1999, we're going to make this a little bit of a trivia. Who was it, Josh?
Who was 27 back then?
I'll give you a hint. Three of the top five were Leafs.
Was McGillney in Toronto then?
No.
Well, the match would have to be one, I'd say.
He is number one. He scored 31 goals.
Matt Sundin is number one, Hall of Famer. I'd have to say there'd have to be at least one Red Wing on the list, given that they won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
No.
In the, really?
Robert Reichel, Steve Ruchin, Keith Primo, Sergei Bereson.
Steve Ruchin is on that list.
He is.
Really?
He is. That year he scored 62 points, 23 goals, and 39 assists for the Anaheim, at the time, Mighty Ducks. And for anybody here in this city, if the name Magnus Arvidsson brings back any memories...
Oh, we remember Magnus here.
He was eighth that year. But nonetheless, would you like to know combined how many goals 13 years later all of those players, and this is a list of 62 players. Do you want to know what they combined for last year in terms of goals?
Sure. Well, give me the number.
None.
Because most of them are probably out of the league.
Because all of them are gone. Even the, obviously we know of the top five, Keith Primo had to retire 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Some of the other names on the list: Craig Conroy, Mike Ricci, Brian Smolinski, Yannick Perreault, Martin Rachinsky, Dmitry Yuskevich, Brian Savage, Brad May, Mike Sillinger, Pavel Bure. These are all players that we know and that were part of the, they're relevant parts of the hockey landscape. But it proves to you, Josh, what kind of financial, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I always say you put yourself in handcuffs when you sign a deal that long.
Yeah.
Because, but as I said last week with the Crosby deal, it's a 13-year deal. But if they have, if they can get a good 7 or 8 years out of that on the 13, they'll take it. That's how hungry everybody is to win. Because look at the deal that most...
Well, this is the ultimate thing. It doesn't even have to be 7 or 8 years, Josh. Say 3 seasons from now. The right amount of seasoning has been put on Charlie Coyle, Michael Granlin, and guys like that. And Suter and Parise are used to things now. They've adjusted after 2 years being in the spotlight, being in their home state. And 3 years into this thing, they win a Stanley Cup. Is anybody in Minnesota going to care that they still have to pay them for another 10 years? Because ultimately...
They should.
Ultimately, they won't. They will not. Because what everything is all about in this situation, in any sports situation, is winning championships. And if they do it, if they win just one... People, you will, as Craig Leopold, the owner of the Minnesota Wild, you will be able to say...
No relation to you, eh, by the way?
No. L-E-I as opposed to L-I.
No, I just thought I'd ask.
I would have had him on the show once or twice had there been a relation.
just a question, you know?
But nonetheless, if they win a championship, even one in that time...
Yeah. But the only problem I have with that is somewhere... The dynamic changed from, because it used to be we wouldn't want to make a deal to that would hurt the franchise down the line. Now it's we only care about winning now. Because 10, 15 years ago, you wouldn't necessarily see deals.
Well, look at it this way, Josh. You say that you don't want to hurt the franchise with long-term contracts. The Minnesota Wild have had 13 years... to do it the draft and season way. And how has that turned out for them?
Right, but what I'm saying is, you can win one or two Stanley Cups, but you might, it's the risk-reward factor. You can win one or two Cups, but you might be looking at another 10 years after that of the same thing that they've just gone through. So, like I said...
But at least they'll have one to their name.
It's risk-reward.
Anything in sports. Yeah. Anything. It's risk reward. And this franchise, as we've already talked about, has never taken a chance. And if you're going to sell the farm, which they didn't have to do.
And in Suter's case, a proverbial farm.
if you have to sell the farm, you sell it on two guys that are from the area that are instantly the faces of the franchise. And what's smart about Parise convincing Suter to go there is, yes, they are both going home and they are embracing the spotlight. But at the same time, Josh, there's somebody to share it with. There's equal partnership in the highs and the lows that will come with whatever they do in Minnesota.
The pressure is 50-50.
It's 50-50. But if they win even one, people will not care. We're going to go to our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to continue breaking this down. There's a couple of things we want to talk about in terms of loyalty of players and of franchises. We're going to get into the Steve Nash signing with the Lakers deal. And then, as mentioned, Louis Moustakas will be up at 6:40 here on the Red Zone. So stay tuned.
Did you know that CKCU FM 93.1 is live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Or that CKCU is the largest listener-supported radio station in Ottawa-Carleton? You did? Well, did you know that CKCU has a Facebook page? Visit www.facebook.com/CKCUFM to see the latest photos and also see the status updates. Also, like us on Facebook. That's www.facebook.com/CKCUFM.
God, you won't believe this.
Something is different.
Good or bad?
Anything different is good.
CKCU programming is now available on demand.
What's going to happen?
Something wonderful.
You can now revisit a previously aired program through the website.
Upload everything. I want to get it all on the internet tonight.
If you missed your favorite program.
What did I do last night?
Or you'd just like to hear it again.
Rock and roll!
Rock and roll!
You can link to the audio through the program's playlist at ckcufm.com.
It says 100% guaranteed.
Each show will be available on demand for 30 days after it originally aired.
Soak it up. It's your last chance.
CKCU, proud to serve you, the listener. Now available on demand.
That's all I have to say about that.
Stay tuned, Boppers. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Red Zone.
Back at it here on the Red Zone. It is 6:22 in the morning. Weather's beautiful outside, in case anybody's waking up and needs a weather report, nice. So you don't have to switch over to another station to listen to one.
Nice to see that big orange ball of fire.
When we come into the studio.
Yeah.
And it's very nice. It's actually very air-conditioned in this studio. Always, always, always applause. 6:22, Alex Leopold alongside Josh Miller. Follow us on Twitter, CKCU_TheRedZone. Like the fan page, CKCU's The Red Zone on Facebook to get access to podcasts and all that fun stuff. Join in the conversation of anything we are saying.
You know, we should tweet out a question this morning, because we're entering what I like to call the dark ages of the sports calendar, because the All-Star break is...
It's the time of year where, Josh, because this... At 5 a.m. when that ball of fire, as he alluded to, comes up in the sky, that is the only time Josh's skin sees the sun in a week.
I have...
So, in this dark age that we're coming to on the calendar, he might have to go outside.
I have 3 days.
Which I understand your skin will spontaneously combust in direct sunlight for more than 10 minutes.
Nice picture. But yeah, there's nothing to do for 3 days. What do normal people do for fun?
Oh yeah, that's right. Your annual 3-day vacation from sports. Which you should tell people why this is, because they don't follow you relentlessly.
I watch sports on a daily basis.
Go on.
If there's a game on, whether it's tennis or baseball or hockey or football.
Or high school volleyball. Josh is on it.
Well, I don't go that far, but yeah. So these are the only 3 days a year where I do not watch sports. So I am completely lost.
Because of the Major League Baseball All-Star
game. Because of the All-Star game. Because it's the only time of year where when one sport goes out of commission, there's nothing else to back it up. So You know, I'm wondering, maybe the tweeters out there, if we can tweet the question, what should I do?
What should Josh do for three days?
What is going on around town that I can get into? You know, can I...
Some trouble and some fun that Joshua Miller can start.
Are there movies I can go see? What are the good movies that are out right now? You know, is there anything going on? What concerts would you recommend at Blues Fest? Things like that. Are there any good restaurants I can try? Tweet it out there. Let me know.
We're talking before the break about Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, and we're breaking the deal down in terms of there are obvious good sides to it, and there are bad sides to it. We covered some of both, but have you heard in terms of reaction from Ryan Suter? I mean, from Shea Weber, sorry. He said that he was shocked, and he was in genuine disbelief over the idea that Suter would leave Nashville. But well, nobody, this is why, is anybody surprised anymore, Josh, when everybody tells you, because we've done this to ourselves, we shot ourselves in the foot. There's a great picture of Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and Larry Bird. Aside from all being Hall of Famers and the best players in the history of basketball, what do they all have in common, Josh?
They all played their careers, well, Jordan later in his career.
We won't pay attention to the...
But they basically...
Jordan round two but they, and three.
But they basically all played their careers with the same team. And I always remember a couple of years ago when this whole Miami convergence between the three guys, between Bosch and LeBron and Wade was going on, and they asked Jordan about it at a celebrity golf tournament in Lake Tahoe. And he said, quite simply, quite staunchly, that it would never happen. He said, I would never pick up the phone and call Bird or Magic and say, hey, let's play together. No, because he said that he wanted to be the greatest. And for him, playing with those guys would diminish that fact.
It goes along with what we were saying before in terms of athletes now are spoiled. They all get their own, not their own,
well,
but,
look at,
but the teams, they all fly on private chartered jets.
Look at Dwight Howard right now in the NBA.
He's saying there is only one team that I will accept a trade to. And that's the Brooklyn Nets.
And for him to say, I either get traded to Brooklyn or I play out my season in Orlando. So you're going to get a guy playing out his season who's not committed because he knows he's not going to be there. So why would he give it 110%, risk getting injured, and mess up a free agency deal? I hate when these great athletes hold guns to the heads of the hands that feed them.
Once upon a time, there was no guarantee. You wanted to guarantee anything in terms of even salary that you were making.
Just about the only thing.
Go out there, be the best, win a championship. Yep. There's your recipe. You want to make, once upon a time, $1 million a year? Win a championship.
I think,
and then we will guarantee you that type of money.
I think sports would be better in general. Cause look at the dichotomies of golf and tennis. Those are sports where if you don't win, you don't make money. And we could endorsement deals, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But if you don't win on your turf, you're not getting money. So to be the best in the world, you have to win 7 Wimbledons. 10, 12 majors like Tiger's got now. He is the best because he wins on the biggest stages. That's why he's the best. If we had incentive-based contracts in sports, we'd all be better off.
Which would never be negotiated into any CBA, but I do agree with you.
But that's I don't want to get into that. But
hold on a second here. My point being, we have done this to ourselves, Josh, because we say we've already looked ahead. People already know who are the big free agents of the 2013 UFA class.
Well,
it up. Years potentially in the making.
Well, they were talking about the Bosch Wade thing, what, two?
Maybe 3 years beforehand. The point is, we hype this up. The players know. They're not stupid. They hear these things every single day, and they know that everybody, who's going to turn it down, Josh? If we get offered $98 million,
see ya.
We're going to take it.
You know, I mean,
we do it to ourselves in terms of we hype it up and we say they can go anywhere and get any sum of money. Those are now the fourth richest contracts in NHL history.
Well, remember last summer I sat here and we were talking about Albert Pujols. I thought there was no way that Albert Pujols would leave St. Louis.
So do the people of St. Louis.
I mean, especially after you win a title. You have a chance.
You figure, what else do you need to do? That's the second time they've won one.
And you have a chance.
With Pujols there.
You're as big a thing in St. Louis since...
As they'll ever be.
Since, I mean, you're just as big as Stan Musial was. Stan Musial. Greatest Cardinal in history. And you don't want to stay there? You take... And it's not like they were offering Albert Pujols chump change in St. Louis either.
They were offering him $200 million.
And you don't stay? I mean, like...
That's why nobody should ever be surprised by these things.
But that's what creates a disconnect between the players and the fans. Because the fans spend their hard-earned money to root on these guys and cheer their hearts out and live and die with everything these guys do.
That's why once upon a time you were given a little more leeway. If you were having a bad year... But you know that it's one of your players that has been there for 10 years and is going to be there for at least another 5. You ease up on them a little bit.
Well, that's why you love guys like Jeter, too, isn't it, though?
But when you sign somebody for $240 million for the next 10 years...
The level of expectation skyrockets.
It skyrockets. You've done it to yourself. But what I hate is all these people want to have their cake and eat it, too. They want to make all the money but escape all the expectations. That's why you haven't seen a truly great athlete captivate their sport in a very long time. The way a Larry Bird, a Magic Johnson, a Michael Jordan.
I think that era has sailed. Because you can't captivate...
Everybody's friends now. Everybody gets private chartered jets. Everybody... There's not the same competitiveness that there used to be.
Well, let me go back to what we started the segment with, which was Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan. And what they always said about each other was, hey, did we respect each other? Hell yes, because we were all great. Did we like each other? Hell no.
They all wanted to win.
I mean...
And that segues perfectly into this whole Steve Nash thing. Because people... It has been a very long time since I've seen anybody give a damn about baseball. I mean, about basketball, sorry, north of the border. And a lot of people looked at the Steve Nash opportunity as one where they will now welcome their native son home with open arms. And he went to the LA Lakers in a sign-and-trade instead. My question for you, Josh, is if you're Brian Colangelo, a guy like Steve Nash in this instance, because Toronto offered the most money, but obviously LA offers...
A chance to win.
A chance to win a championship.
A chance to play with Kobe.
A chance to win with Kobe. But what does that say? Not about the Raptors, because Brian Colangelo can throw the most money at somebody, but if they don't sign on the dotted line, there's nothing more that he can do. But what does that say about the Raptors organization and the general disarray it must be in if Canada's most famous basketball player to ever live, you throw the most money at him and he doesn't even look at it and say, yeah, I'll come?
Well, hold
on. And people overstated a little too much because they say coming home. They just mean playing in Canada.
Yeah.
Because he is from BC.
Well, hold on. I mean, you can say all you want about the Raptors being in disarray, and they are. But you have to remember that Nash does not yet have a title. He is 30.
Do you think if he's 37. Do you think if Steve Nash had a title already, he would have gone to Toronto?
He would have given it more consideration, I will say that. Because
I don't want you to be a fence sitter on this. Would he come to Toronto if he had already had an NBA championship?
I don't think so. I don't see why anybody would, because everybody is talking like Steve Nash owes the Raptors something. He doesn't. Because everybody is claiming, oh, Steve Nash coming to Toronto would grow the sport of basketball in Canada. Well, that's not Nash's responsibility. Nash's responsibility is to do what's best for himself. Because it's not up to Nash to grow the sport. Nash has already grown the sport through his great play. And if Nash wins a title in LA, that will grow the sport. Because Nash is fun to watch no matter where he plays. And when it comes down to LA and Toronto, that's not even a contest.
I think it speaks to, as I'm saying, the underlying peril that the Toronto Raptors are in. If there is a guy who is Canadian and he is old and he is offered the most amount of money and he still won't come here, whether or not Steve Nash wanted that to be the case, it is a trickle-down effect, Josh, because people around the league who already know nothing about Toronto or nothing about Canada, and they know that the Raptors offered him the most money and even he's saying no, that's what I'm talking about here. Nobody blames Steve Nash for choosing the Lakers over the Raptors. It's like choosing McDonald's over filet mignon. You don't do it. But the bottom line is, it shows how far away the Raptors are from NBA relevance, and you really have to take a longer look now of whether or not a basketball team in Canada is ever going to be a viable, regular, consistent juggernaut in terms of making money, in terms of making the playoffs, in terms of doing anything in the playoffs.
I just think there's too many differences between here and the United States for anybody to really want to come. And that's going to be the stumbling hurdle they're going to have throughout their existence.
It shows how quickly it can all turn around, because the Oklahoma City are a great example of that. You draft well, which the Raptors can't seem to do, but you draft well and you have a good core amongst you, and suddenly this thing isn't going to be so bad. They're going to leave as soon as they possibly can, but in those, you know, however many years you have, in those 1 to 7 years before they can run to whatever team they want, create something, and create something that can win and win now. This is more so an immediate winning league than the NHL is. Because a basketball team can turn around like that. You can go from crap to playoff spot in no time flat, especially if you're in the Eastern Conference. If Steve Nash was on the Raptors, Josh, they would have made the playoffs next year. You've got him distributing the ball to young players like Valanciunas, who's supposed to be over there next year, to DeMar DeRozan, to Ed Davis. You're going to make the playoffs. You make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference in the NBA with a sub-500 record. But now, who knows how much longer this thing will toil, how long it'll be before somebody decides to put a bullet in the head of the Toronto Raptors, because they are...
Would it behoove the Raptors to maybe supersede from the Maple Leafs?
I think there's nothing you can do there. I think that this is more disturbing in more ways than one, because you know, as a Raptors fan, as the organization, you did everything you could, and it still wasn't enough. Not to win a championship, Josh. Not to make it into the playoffs, but just to sign the most famous native son to play basketball from this country.
Well, you know, it's like I said, I don't see why everybody's pointing the finger at Nash, but... you know, that's what the media does. They like to point the finger these days. That's what they're going to do. But I'll be interested to watch the Lakers this year with the distribution of the basketball that Nash will give everybody. We will take a break. We will be back. Louis Moustakas will join us, and you'll want to stay tuned. I'll have a special tribute later on to Andy Griffith. Yes, Andy Griffith, I said it. Louis Moustakas coming up after the break. Stay tuned.
It's hot. It's humid.
muggy.
And you're tired of listening to...
You don't have to be the full-time entertainment committee this summer. For 1 week, we'll take care of that for you.
CKCU offers the best alternative out there. Radio Camp. Send them to us, and we will mold them into future radio stars.
They will learn how to record, edit, produce radio plays, and commercials.
Back to you, Susan.
At the end of the week, they will host their own radio program live on the air.
We guarantee your child will come home every day with a big smile, and you won't have to listen to I'm Bored anymore.
To reserve a space for your child, contact David Sarazen at 520-3533.
Radio Camp runs this year through the months of July and August.
Space is limited and fills up quickly, so call today.
Hello? Yeah, I'm talking to you. No, no, not you. You, the business owner who listens to the station. Not all the rest of you who listen to CKCU. You can talk amongst yourselves right now. Okay, as a business owner, have you ever considered advertising on CKCU? You listen to the station along with thousands of others, right? You know we have varied and dedicated listeners. You're one of them, right? So you know how amazing our programming is and how dynamic our ads are. But you probably don't know how inexpensive it is to get your message on air at CKCU. All you have to do is contact Ron Steeds, the CKCU sponsorship coordinator, by email at sponsors@ckcufm.com or by phone at 613-520-2600, extension 1622, to find out more. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to the Red Zone.
Back here on the Red Zone, it is 6:41 in the morning. Alex Leopold, Josh Miller. Back at it, we have right now our special guest on the line this morning, Louis Moustakis, who is our Habs insider slash blogger, who we haven't talked to in a couple of weeks. He's on the line joining us this morning. Louis, I know it's early, but how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. How about you guys?
We're doing well, but we want your initial opinion about this, all the stuff that we've been talking about this morning, kind of the theme of the show, that nobody really shows loyalty anymore. Did it? You can paint it both ways. You can say that Ryan Suter and Zach Parise showed no loyalty to their respective franchises, who they played their whole careers with up until this point. But you can also say that they showed loyalty in terms of going home to play, well, as close to home as they possibly can. What did you think of those deals? Were you surprised by them? Were you...
I don't want to say surprised. I guess, like everyone, I was sort of surprised they both signed with Minnesota. But what always confuses me about these really long deals is, from the player's perspective, I wonder why you would sign a 13-year deal. I mean, if things go south on that deal, and you never think that way, but it can happen, like it's happened for Luongo or DiPietro or any number of others, you become untradeable. Like, that's not a position you necessarily want to put yourself in, to become this toxic asset. And if in 5 years, you know, Parise can't score more than 50 points a season, and he's not scored more than 80 very often to begin with, if he can't score more than 50, then all of a sudden his contract looks like a huge dud. And he can't be traded, and then he has all this pressure in Minnesota, and he starts hating his life, but he's stuck there for another 7 years.
So what do you think, Louis? Do you think that in the new CBA, do you think that there's going to be some sort of negotiation or bargaining chip where they say, hey, the longest deal that you can make with any player is 5 years, it's 6 years? Do you think anything is going to be negotiated into that? Because really, the owners are the ones that still sign on the dotted line to give these guys this much money for this period of time, but they're going to turn right around and they're going to say in CBA negotiations, hey, contract lengths are getting out of control. Do you think that 5-6 years or something like that, something to that extent, is going to be negotiated into this CBA?
I can't imagine how it wouldn't be a talking point. I mean, even Craig Leopold, 2-3 months ago, was quoted as saying how spending was out of control, and that's why they're not making any money. And, of course, now he signs two players to $200 million deals, but, you know, whatever. But yeah, of course it's going to be a talking point. I think that and how the average is calculated, because that might be the NHLPA's counterargument. The deals are so long, but you look at the final years of Sutter and Parise, and the last year they have $1 million base salary.
Well, it's cap circumvention is what it is.
Oh, I know. I don't know how the league got so uppity about Kovalchuk and then saw these two deals and thought they were just fine. I don't understand how you go from $12 million 1 year to $1 million in the final year and you think this is okay. It's clearly circumvention, but the league didn't want to make a show of it, unlike the Devils, for whatever reason.
Well, let's talk about some of the signings of the Habs now, and there are certain teams that are still holding out in terms of giving these ridiculously long contracts to people. And the most recent signings by the Canadiens have been Carey Price, who is a 6-year, $39 million deal. They signed Brandon Prust to a 4-year, $10 million deal, and Colby Armstrong to a 1-year, $1 million deal. Let's break it down player by player here, starting with the big fish, Carey Price. Are you surprised? Did you think that it was going to get that he was going to get more in terms of money? Do you think that it's... You can't argue the length here, because the kid's only, what, 23, 24 years old? He's only going to be signed to the point that he's 30. But in terms of money, are you surprised? Do you like the deal?
It's hardly a hometown discount, but if you look at other goalies like Ryan Miller, Lundqvist, Backstrom out in Minnesota, they all make around that salary. Their cap hits are similar. So, I mean, really... It was a necessary deal, and it wasn't, you know, way above market or anything, so it was fine. The length is good, as you point out. Having him play until 30 is hardly a problem, or 29, or whatever it ends up being. So, I mean, really, it was just sort of matter of fact, that's the deal. It's covered, now we can move on.
Are you surprised that he did sign a contract of a 6-year term? Do you, because there's been some turmoil with Price in Montreal. Are you surprised that he signed this deal of 6 years? Did you think it should be more? Did you think it should be less? Were you surprised at all that he agreed to it?
I think 6 years is a good number. It's long, but it's not terrifyingly long like the 13-year deals in Minnesota. And not, of course, not that I know Price personally, but the sense I've always gotten from him is that he wants to be the number one guy, but not just anywhere. He wants to be the number one guy in Montreal. He wants to thrive under that pressure.
Go ahead, Louis.
Go ahead, Josh.
Because I don't think you were saying about the deals earlier, unlike the Parise deals, the terms of Price's deal would still allow him to be a tradable asset?
Yes.
Yeah. So, the thing, though, with Price is we know that Michel Therrien sometimes is a little hard on his players, particularly his goaltenders. How do you think that relationship might work out?
I think the one thing that reassures me about Michel Therrien's second run around is his temper has cooled since his first stay in Montreal. And beyond that, I think he knows where his bread is buttered, and he knows it's with Carey Price. So I think he'll handle it in a very appropriate way, because arguably the biggest MVP to his team has been Carey Price. Even out of 15th place team, his value... They would have been Columbus bad had he not been there.
Columbus bad, I like that.
It's that simple. And his save percentage has always been well above 900. Even it was 916 last year, and Montreal is a garbage team. So Michel Therrien, I think, will cut him some slack, and it's not going to be an issue.
They went out there and they signed some muscle, which is something that has always been said that the Montreal Canadiens have been lacking, certainly in recent memory. They went out and signed Brandon Prust. They went out and signed Colby Armstrong. Start with Prust. I mean, what do you think? He is a guy that is in the meat and potatoes of his career. He is an angry individual. He plays with a burr under his saddle. Do you like the deal? I mean, everybody makes the argument this time of year, well, they're overpaid. Well, when somebody hits free agent open market now and you have a shallow pool to work with, people are going to get overpaid. So what do you think about Brandon Prust and what he can bring to the Canadiens team?
I mean, it's a terrible overpayment. I don't think there's any doubt about that. A guy who scored 5 goals last year doesn't behoove a $2.5 million salary. But having said that, Montreal went out and addressed a pretty gaping need, because not only can he, if need be, actually beat the crap out of someone and defend other players, But he brings that physicality. He had over 140 hits last year, 160 hits the year before. He brings that element to the team that wasn't there before, and now it doesn't all rest on Travis Mullen to facilitate the fighting and the being the gritty veteran and all of that. And it sort of spreads that around the team, which I think is something Montreal really needed.
Well, we know that the players they signed are decent grinding players. They add a little more scoring punch, particularly with Colby Armstrong if he has a good year. But talk about maybe the Marc Bergevin and the style of players that he wanted, and Therrien as well, and do they fit the mold to what they're trying to build?
I mean, easily they do. You just look at Colby Armstrong and Francis Bouillon, and both have a long history with Michel Therrien. Armstrong from the Pittsburgh organization, and even in the minors when Therrien coached down there. Bouillon in junior and back in the Montreal days. They are players, they're gritty, they'll do what the coach says, they won't create a scene. I think they clearly do fit that mold of blue-collar, willing to follow orders, willing to go into corners. That perhaps was missing a bit last year.
Now, Colby Armstrong is obviously, nobody's going to argue that there's a whole lot of risk here. I mean, it's 1 year, $1 million. But he was shown to be made of glass the last couple of years in Toronto. Things didn't work out for either side. Do you see him having a bounce back year, or do you see him continuing to have the problems that he's been having?
Honestly, I this is my favorite signing of the bunch because it's short, it's cheap, it's risk-free. And the guy has had many seasons above the 30-point plateau, including two 40-point seasons. And unlike where Montreal would have to put Travis Mullen or Mathieu Das on the first two lines if there were injuries last year, at least Colby Armstrong has shown he can, at least in a short term, fill those roles. And you know what? If he's made out of glass again, then what's the worst that's going to happen? Montreal has half of his players made out of glass, so it's really nothing new. And you call someone up. It's really no risk and all reward in his case.
Is Bergevin done, do you think, in terms of off-season moves? Do you expect something else to be addressed?
I hope he's not done, but I think a lot of people hope he's not. To my mind, the one, I guess, big need on the team is on its blue line. And I know there's sort of a logjam of defensemen, but the problem is a lot of these defensemen play very similar styles. And you look at Yannick Weber and Rafael Diaz, the two Swiss defensemen, similar statistics, about 3 goals and 13 odd assists each last year. Thomas Cabrelet plays a similar puck-moving style. Even the young one, they just re-signed, Frédéric Saint-Denis, a fairly good puck mover, but you have 4 of those guys now who fall into that more offensive puck-moving category, and I don't think there's room on the team for all of them, and that's something that's going to need to be addressed. Who do you keep, and who fills what role on the blue line?
As a positive, though, what you're saying is they do have assets to deal with.
Especially if I were an NHL general manager, Rafael Diaz, who had his rookie season last year, just filed for salary arbitration, he's an excellent puck mover. Give him one more or two more years in the NHL, getting acclimatized to the game in North America, and he really could be quite an asset.
So, Louis, before we let you go here, in terms of on the blog, what is coming up on the blog? What is recently up on the blog that people should know about to do with the Canadiens?
Basically, we've been working on a series covering, sort of profiling the different players on the Montreal Canadiens. I'm going to put up a profile later today about Carey Price. And otherwise, every day, daily news updates, daily news roundups, and discussion and debate. Every day, there's something new.
We want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us this morning. We will talk to you again sometime soon. You have yourself a good morning, sir.
Thanks for getting up early, Louis.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye, guys.
All right, that was Louis Moustakas, Habs blogger, joining us live and bright and early. Thanks for that.
So one thing that I wanted to get to is some nice little things around the sports world before we send off the show and a bunch of random stuff that we would like to talk about. While I also have to queue up this video that Josh would like to put on, something that I will say in the meantime is Chad Johnson, who I have never been a fan of. Did you hear about this? What the nice thing that he did for somebody?
He invited a someone.
Well, don't give away the whole farm. Just let me know if you are aware of what he did. Okay. So what he did, for those that don't know, is he was on Twitter and he was announcing that he is getting married. This was last week, July 4th, it was this week. He announced that he was getting married over Twitter. And a lonely woman of who was together with her husband for over 30 years, I think it was 33 years, she lost him 2 weeks ago. Said she was having a very hard time. She said, I'm feeling pretty low today. Lost my hubby 2 weeks ago. Together 30 years, very hard. And Chad Johnson asked, do you have a passport? And she said, yes, I do. And he said, can you pack up and come to the wedding? She said, yes, where is it? And he said, check your DM, just like your direct message. This is on Twitter, your inbox. Start packing. His assistant, Evelyn, will make arrangements. See you tonight / early AM. And she said, I'm flabbergasted. I love you. I'll be there. So it was a very, very, very nice gesture by a guy who's not really known for a whole lot of nice gestures. So as much as we talk about all the... We tear into the athletes in terms of showing no loyalty or, you know, turning their backs on the fans and stuff like that. One good and one positive that Twitter does offer us these days, that story would have never been told without social media. And while it doesn't happen enough, it is still cool and very good of Chad Johnson to do it even once.
You know, it's a funny thing because I think...
What's this video called, by the way, so that I can cue it up?
What it was football, is what I... But I think... That one of the things that it's interesting that you say this because it's Twitter that allows, it's Twitter that allows these things to come to light, but it's Twitter that allows Chad Johnson's reputation to be misconstrued, but it's also this that allows him to have somewhat of a good reputation. Anyway, but so did you have anything else you wanted to say about?
I think that's just about everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if this video is going to cue.
Yeah,
though.
Is that because there are
these are news stories.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll just talk while you. But what I wanted to do, I don't know if I'll be able to, is Andy Griffith passed away this week.
I think that's the best you can do. I think you're only going to be able to talk about him because these bad boys are 5.5 minutes in length.
Well, we could clip it, but or can we link the clip to the blog?
Or the Facebook page or the Twitter page.
Yeah.
We can do all of those things.
Because the reason I brought this up and the reason I wanted to put it on was the first monologue that Andy Griffith did that made him famous was called What It was Football. And it was about a priest that ends up at a football game by accident. And doesn't know anything about football, doesn't know what football is. And he describes his football experience. And that was a record made by Andy Griffith in 1954, predating the Andy Griffith Show. And that really put Andy on the map in 1954.
Were you a fan of many of his shows or just the Andy Griffith Show?
Were you
a fan of Matlock?
I thought Andy Griffith was a tremendous actor. You being a movie buff would have obviously perhaps seen many of his movies that he did. I remember one of his later roles. You ever see the movie Spy Hard?
No.
With Leslie Nielsen? And he played an evil...
Two great old school comedians.
Yes,
right there.
Who have both left us in recent years.
But Leslie Nielsen died, what, was it 2 summers ago already?
Yeah.
1 summer ago? It's been a while already.
But and he played the foil to Leslie Nielsen. In that movie, he was an evil general based on bent on taking over the world.
Hmm.
And Leslie Nielsen's job was to try to stop him as a spy. It was a spoof of espionage movies. It's quite good. If you might want to check it out. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in. We'll link it to.
We'll put it up there. People will see it eventually. We got about 1.5 minutes of showtime left. If anybody wants to hear the show in full, they tuned in halfway through, they want to hear Louis Moustakas' interview, any number of reasons why you might want to listen to the show again or show your friends, CKCU_TheRedZone on Twitter. Like the fan page, CKCU's The Red Zone on Facebook. There are a ton of different ways to listen to the show. also, listen to our good friends at Friday Night Derailment coming on tonight, 10 to 12.
Are you going on?
I don't know yet. They haven't asked me, but a lot of the times I'll do double billing here at CKCU on Fridays and do 3 hours of radio in the day.
Wimbledon men's semis this morning. Djokovic, Federer, Murray, Tsonga. Murray lucky to go to his first Wimbledon final. Imagine the pressure. Talking about pressure, if that guy gets through this morning. I'm picking him. I think he's going to go through. I think he'll play Djokovic in Sunday's final. But that's just about all the time we have. Susan Johnston will not be in next.
But I believe that Matthew Crocher will be taking over for her after the BBC World Service News update and some music.
So we thank Matthew. The BBC World News will be coming up next. That's all the time we have. Have a great weekend. So long, everybody.